This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. Neil Conan is away. Actress Lisa Kudrow played the oddest of the friends, and since that hit sitcom ended in 2004, she's only continued to expand her oddball repertoire, from the comeback's has-been actress Valerie Cherish to an inpatient therapist in Web Therapy. Kudrow has specialized in characters with lots of quirks and not a whole lot of self-awareness. You can see Lisa Kudrow right now in more than a few incarnations, on the big screen in the movie Paper Man with Jeff Daniels, on the small screen in Who Do You Think You Are, the genealogy reality TV series she executive produced, and on the internet in the series Web Therapy. Web Therapy is now in its third season, and soon you'll be able to see it on the Showtime cable network. Lisa Kudrow joins us in a moment. If you have questions about her work, have you seen Web Therapy? Give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Later this hour, NPR counterterrorism correspondent Dina Temple-Raston joins us with the latest details on the Times Square bomber. But first, Lisa Kudrow. She's an Emmy-winning actress, and she's with us today from our studios at NPR West. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
You've got a whole lot going on right now, but I want to start with the Web Therapy show, because it's already in its third season. How did you get into the idea of doing a web-only show?
Well, we were asked, Dan Bukatinsky, my partner and I, we were asked to do a web series years ago, and the answer was no. Because we weren't really interested in doing that. Or they mostly seemed to be sitcoms that were broken up into five-minute segments. And But I kept thinking about it anyway. And I just had thought, well, if something's on the web, it should be quick and about the web. And then I just thought the worst idea in the world on the web would be a therapist who only sees people online on an iChat thing and for only 3 minutes.
And then add the fact that she's kind of a jerk, you know? I mean...
Right. So then we got to work with Don Roos also, you know, who's you know, executive producing this and directing. He's a, you know, writer-director. And we just figured out that what kind of person would do this or think it was a good idea? She had to be horrible and horribly stupid.
Well, let's play a clip.
I was really very hopeful when I switched you from the 50-minute in-person sessions to these truncated 3-minute sessions, right, hoping it would prompt you to get to your issues,
right,
so that we could do some real work instead,
right,
of the self-indulgent sort of blather,
yeah,
you know, that occupies a 50-minute session.
Right.
Alas, that hasn't happened.
Oh, gosh, I'm sorry.
That was Dan Bukatinsky playing Jerome.
Do you, how much of it is scripted and how much of it is improv?
Well, we write the outlines so that we know, you know, what story points need to be hit. And then we improvise. The actors improvise.
Is it hard to keep a straight face?
Yeah, that's really hard.
You said that you wanted a web series to be about the web. And that we should say it's set up that you see these two chat windows, sometimes one or the other. But it looks like a desktop. And there's sort of business around the side of the desktop that's also part of your characters, what she would have on her computer. I mean, it's all sort of set up to give you some insight into the character.
Yeah, if you care to look at it. In the first season, you see, you know, a folder for Lockman Brothers, which is some financial institution we made up that she was working at. And then, you know, possibly was blackmailing them over some sexual harassment suit. That's how she's getting funded. Yeah, you can see folders for certain files. There's an evidence file, and she's just always collecting things, and yeah.
Given that, I mean, other than its brevity, how do you feel about that medium?
It's a great medium. You know, it reminds me a lot of, you know, sort of earlier days of independent film, and where there's just not much at stake, so you can do what you want. And, you know, you can really create a show And you have the time to really develop it and find its pace and rhythm and, you know, really work it out. And you can't really do that on TV anymore.
Well, that sense of, you know, no grown-ups are making you stop what you're doing. Do you think that'll change somewhat when it starts running on Showtime?
I don't think so. I mean, either it'll work for them and they'll want more, or they won't. But hopefully we'll still be able to do it on the web, and I think we will be.
What is the business model? How do you make a show for the web? How do you pay for it?
Well, okay, so Lexis is underwriting the web series. They have a channel, L Studio, you know, on the web, L Studio, and they have different programming on that. So we're on L Studio. And then and so they give us the money so we can make the shows.
And they have nothing to do with content. They're just underwriting it.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, especially at first, there were no demands at all, other than, you know, because we're Lexis, we don't want anything too vulgar. And, you know, but we weren't planning on doing that anyway.
Yeah. Have you seen Fiona kind of grow into her own in 8-minute chunks?
Well, yeah. I mean, we started to really explore her marriage and, you know, and then this third season, we have her husband's running for Congress and he's possibly gay, probably gay. And so you have all these secrets and we just see how her husband being, you know, on the campaign trail with him has really cut into her own interests. And it's starting to bug her a lot.
Well, it's hard to know what her own interests are because her patients clearly aren't among them.
No, they're a means to an end. You know, she has the first season is about her treatment modality that she keeps saying over and over. And I don't know exactly how she wants to cash in on that, but she thinks she can. And and then the second season is, and she's trying to, yeah, just build. The first season is building up her sort of practice and getting the word out. And the second season is a lot of how do I, you know, become famous doing this in a way and get well known. And it ends with, and we also see how, you know, her relationship with one of the Lockman brothers and, you know, how she was getting money from them to keep going with her web therapy. And it ends with a woman who, oh no, it end, the second season ends with her husband saying, I'm going to run for Congress, because she had just left him thinking he was having an affair. And turns out he thought he was having an affair with a guy, but it turned out to be an actual woman. He thought it was a transvestite. And he was disappointed. And then she's left him for Scottish media mogul, played by Alan Cumming. And her husband's running for Congress, and she comes back, straight back to him, so she can be on the campaign trail, because that's exciting.
My guest is Lisa Kudrow. She's talking about her new internet series, Web Therapy, which is being picked up by Showtime. She's also got a new movie and is executive producing a TV show. If you'd like to join us, the number is 800-989-8255, or you can send us email, talk@npr.org. You mentioned Alan Cumming playing the Scottish media mogul. You've also had a bunch of other friends and colleagues come do guest characters. What do people say about it?
They say they had a lot of fun. I mean, that's what's been so great. And even from the first season, we had Jane Lynch and Tim Bagley. And I know I'm forgetting some people, which is too bad. But people were just like, yes, I'll do it. Fine. Because there's nothing to lose, you know? Like I said, it was sort of like, you know, when independent films where you could do it, there wasn't huge money for huge distribution. And so you had nothing to lose except to have fun and do something really good. And if it worked, then great. And if not, you know, no harm done. So it feels like that to me.
Yeah, so I also can't imagine it's a huge time commitment, right? I mean, it's a simple set and a camera right in your face, and it's not a lot of lighting and angles and all of that.
Right. It's also at most 3 days to shoot 15 webisodes.
Let's take a call from Ahmed in Kansas City. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Yeah, hi. I'm so excited to be talking to Lisa Kudrow.
Oh, hi.
I'm a huge, huge fan. I The Comeback is one of my favorite shows of all time. I make all my friends watch it.
Oh, thanks. Good.
I've also, and was so disappointed that it never had a second season.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. But I also love the new web show, and I was wondering, I see some similarities between Fiona and Valerie Cherish, and was, sorry, I'm really nervous and excited, but I was wondering, are you more interested in playing roles like that, or do you see the similarities? And yeah, I'm just more excited to tell you how much I love you and love The Comeback and love the new show and all that. So.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. Well, do I see, at the beginning I saw some similarities and that wasn't intentional. but, Fiona's not a nice person. And Valerie actually was a really decent person, even if she was a little misguided. But Fiona's really not a nice person. So to me, they're very different.
Let's hear from Ellen in Tulsa. Ellen,
hi.
Welcome.
Hi, thanks.
Go ahead, Ellen. You're on the air.
I was just wanting to say that I'm a psychology student at the University of Tulsa, and in my psychology class, we actually watched web therapy and tried to pick out the unethical things. And my professor just thought it was so funny, and we watched like 4 or 5 episodes during that class and tried to pick out the unethical things that were happening.
How'd you do?
I'm sorry?
How'd you do? How'd you score? Did you get all of them?
Yeah, we got a lot. We listed about 15 things in all of those episodes that we watched. We watched the one you were talking about, the end of the second season where your husband thought the woman was a transvestite. That
right.
was one of our favorites.
Ellen, thank you so much for your call. See, there, Lisa Kudrow, in addition to actress and producer, you are educating psychology students everywhere.
Fulfilling.
More with Lisa Kudrow and more of your calls at 800-989-8255. Also, your emails, talk@npr.org. We will be back in just a minute. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. We're talking with actress and producer Lisa Kudrow, and we're taking your calls at 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Let's hear from Kate in Palo Alto. Kate, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I just want to say I've never heard of the program before, but I certainly will watch it now. It sounds hilarious. And my question is regarding whether or not it's like a pun intended joke towards Dr. Laura, because it sounds so similar. Dr. Laura like has clients call in and she gives like literally 3 minutes just like your web program does towards these people and tries to encourage them, and she sounds so mean on the air. Is there a joke involved in that?
No, there wasn't intentionally. I really didn't listen to Dr. Laura. Until after we did web therapy, I happened to tune in, and I could not believe my ears. I mean, I thought she was really mean, too. And also, like, wow, you speak with so much authority, and you don't even know this person. I mean, you don't know anything. And it did remind me a lot of Fiona, but I didn't have her in mind.
You thought you were doing parody.
No, of something that didn't, yeah.
Right.
Exist. I mean, not of Dr. Laura.
Right. We've been talking about web therapy, but you've got a bunch of other projects going on. You recently executive produced NBC's Genealogy TV reality series, Who Do You Think You Are? Also appeared in the series, tracing your own family tree back to Ilya Belarus. Let's listen to Lisa Kudrow traveling to Belarus to see where her great-grandmother lived.
This is what I pictured. This is exactly what I pictured. It's unbelievable. I feel connected to the smile that would come across her face when she'd say it was so beautiful. And I'm so happy that she got to grow up here. And it's so pretty. And I'm also so happy that she got out and her sisters got out. And I'm sorry for everybody else.
Now, you knew your grandmother. Did you know that your great-grandmother was killed by the Nazis?
I had heard that. My grandmother told me when I was a kid that she was murdered by Hitler, who I thought was a serial killer because I was, you know, a kid. So I heard that. And then later on, I remember my father telling me some story along the lines of there was a relative who came who had survived and told everyone what happened to the family in Ilya. But, you know, when you hear stories from your family, you're not sure whether they're completely accurate or not. And not that I didn't believe anybody, but, you know, that, you know, there was something lost in translation or something. And so I
just
wanted
to... Or just an unwillingness to talk about it, you know? There's a lot from your grandmother's generation that just didn't want to necessarily run back through that period of time.
That's true. Well, my grandmother wasn't there. She left in 1921. So she only knew what this relative had told her. And she knew, of course, the letters from her mother and her, you know, sisters, brothers, those had stopped. So, and they knew something probably bad had happened. So I think in 1947, when they got the news from this cousin, they were, of course, devastated. Then he left, this cousin, because he was working on some Polish ship, like a merchant marine or something, and they begged him to stay in Brownsville or in the Bronx, wherever he was visiting them. And he wouldn't. He left, and they heard he died. So I went to, you know, to Belarus just to see what I could find out, if there was anything to find out, even about life before, you know, before World War II, but there was nothing because the synagogue had been destroyed, so there were no records. And then also to go on to Poland to find out what happened to that cousin, try to see how he was killed.
What did you find?
He was alive. It was a miracle. It was, you know, to me, it was a real miracle. And, you know, when I went to Poland, this had been already been a tough trip, you know, going to Belarus. It was, that was tough. And so I go to Poland, I land. And this really nice driver is driving me to the hotel near Gdynia. And she says, oh, this hotel you're staying at is really nice. It's where Mr. Hitler stayed. And I had never, ever heard Mr. before that name before. So maybe she doesn't know English. What was that? She said, yes, Mr. Hitler stayed. Like, it's a selling point.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to my room and I almost... couldn't take it anymore because I don't, like, where am I? What, this is too much. And, you know, now I'm going to find out what, you know, how Yuri died. And then part of me, you know, a little coping mechanism I have is I just go off into another scenario, which is, oh, wouldn't it be great if he didn't die and he got married. And if he got married and he had kids, and then had grandkids, and just nothing horrible happened. It's just ordinary. Ordinary goodness would be a miracle. And then I felt like I landed back on Earth and realized, but that's not what happens here. That's not how things turn out. Okay. So, you know, tried to gather some strength for the next day. And then sure enough, he was alive, and it really felt like a miracle that he was alive.
We have an email from Brittany who says, I just wanted to let you know I was so moved by your episode of NBC's Who Are You? I nearly cried when you met your distant relatives. Have you kept in touch?
Yes, we have kept in touch. Uh-huh. I especially, I'm in touch with his grandson, Tomek. We text, and he's coming to visit.
We also have an email from Sandra in Prattsburg, New York, who says, as a genealogist, I loved Who Do You Think You Are? How did this idea get started, and will there be another season?
There will be another season. That's the exciting news. And, you know, this show has been on in the UK. It's been on the BBC for 8 seasons. So I was working in Ireland watching the BBC one night and saw the show. And I thought it was the best thing I'd ever seen. So, you know, I got in touch with Alex Graham, who created the show, and he invited us to produce it with him in the U.S.
And was that an easy sell? I mean, to bring it onto U.S. networks?
I don't think it was terribly easy. I think, you know, I think Alex had tried before but didn't like, you know, what the options were. And he wanted to make sure if he was going to do it in the U.S., it would be done properly. And I think he had enough, you know, he felt comfortable enough with NBC that they would do it properly. And they really came through. They really came through. I have to say that, you know, wouldn't have been my instinct to take a show like that. It's really, you know, in the UK especially, it's a historical documentary series. And my first instinct wouldn't be, you know, a major network. But they really, really surprised me. They were great.
Let's hear from Troy in Phoenix, Arizona. Troy, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
My question is with your particular personality, do you find it easier to obtain serious roles or comedic roles, and which ones did you find more fulfilling afterwards? And that's all I have. I'll take my chair. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, for independent films, I feel like I'm mostly offered serious roles. And, you know, for other movies, it's lighter roles. And I think they're both, you know what, they're both fulfilling, to be honest with you. I think, you know, comedy is really challenging. There's so many different kinds of comedy. So finding the right tone can be really challenging. And I think they're both really fulfilling. Anything good is worthwhile.
What makes something a role good to you?
Well, if there are some layers to it to explore, that it's not just, you know, a mean person, or, you know, like in Paper Man, for example, I liked that marriage was sort of complicated. So, you know, it's a writer with writer's block, and he's married to a successful vascular surgeon. That's what I played. And I liked that it wasn't just, you know, she's disappointed in who he turned out to be, and so that's, you know, the couple's identity is disappointing, but she's also supportive because she's committed and she wants him to do well on that level too. And, you know, it's not all just one thing.
Alex in Tallahassee writes, "You were so great as Lucia in The Opposite of Sex. What was it like to play such a serious and angst-ridden character, a stark contrast to your character on Friends? Can you tell about what drew you to that role?"
What drew me to that role was Don Roos's script. He wrote Opposite of Sex, and he directed it. And I don't know when I had read something that good. And I wasn't even sure I understood Lucia, the character. But I knew I wanted to be part of this and that I'd figure it out at some point. And I did. And, you know, Don was really helpful. And I loved playing Lucia. I loved that.
What did you figure out about her? Who was she?
She was someone who was just wound really tightly, you know, and that there's no room for error. And I think, you know, and her brother died of AIDS, who she was the closest to in the world. He was everything to her. That was her life. And, you know, she just never relaxed enough to have a life of her own. She really felt like there are definite rules, and you avoid danger, and sex is dangerous, and love is dangerous also, and you stay tight and close to yourself, you know. And I don't know. I understood it.
Let's hear from Law in New York. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi. Thank you so much. Lisa, first of all, it is an unbelievable pleasure to talk to you. And I don't think actors realize, like, I'm an actor, and more importantly, I'm an improviser. And I just want to thank you, because in kind of the formative years of being an actor, you were in my living room every Thursday night, and it shaped my sense of humor a little bit. So I first wanted to thank you.
Oh, thank you. That's nice.
Yeah. I kind of was curious. I know you're a trained improviser as well, and I feel like we're kind of just starting to get our due a little bit, because we're able to improvise sometimes work that is as funny as some scripted things, and I wondered if you think more of that's going to happen now.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, you know, let's see. Financially, it cuts down, unfortunately, on a writing staff, you know, for shows. You know, Larry David does that. Christopher Guest, all those fantastic movies, you know, are improvised. I don't know. I think, you know, there's still so much merit to a crafted script, you know, to a story that, you know, they're still very necessary. They really, you know, it really is. And I think improvisation is a fantastic tool, especially for an actor, to make sure that you're listening and responding, you know, sort of the basics of acting. So I think improvisation is a really important exercise for actors.
You participated in the Groundlings, the famous improv theater group. So you find it sort of an underpinning of more scripted work?
Yes, I do, on different levels, for writers also. I think there were a lot of writers in the that came out of the Groundlings that went into television. Because also, when you're writing sketches, you know, you're really learning how to get the who, what, where, beginning, middle, end of a story. Every line better be a joke that informs you about the character and moves the story along. So, you know, writing those sketches are also, I think, wonderful writing exercises as well.
My guest is Lisa Kudrow. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We have email from someone who just gave, Stephen, there's his name. He says, yesterday I watched Band Slam. I love teen movies with musical themes and really enjoyed this one. Lisa anchored it and brought some nice maturity to what could have been a silly movie. In fact, this one worked much better for me than any of the High School Musicals or the Inner City Kid Makes Good at the Rich High School flicks. I wasn't sure how Lisa's part was going to work because I was having trouble letting go of her friend's persona, the Dipsy Blonde, but she came across as a very real, very caring mother and a great-looking woman. Excellent work, Lisa. By the way, I will turn 70 on the last day of this year, two kids, two grandkids, and about 400 college students in my class.
Wow. Oh. That's nice. Can I get a copy of that?
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks.
We'll forward that one on. Let's hear from Courtney in Sedona, Arizona. Courtney, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much. First of all, I'd like to say hi, Lisa. I am a fellow Vassar graduate.
Oh, hi.
Hi. And you are definitely one of my idols. I actually was a drama major, but as I understand it, you were a biology major.
That's right.
At Vassar. And so I guess my first question for you is, how did you make the transition into acting? And why or what made you move from biology to acting? And my second is, obviously being a biology major and graduating from a Seven Sisters school, you're very, very, very smart. So how do you play these very ditzy, very funny roles so well? Do you find them a challenge, or are you just a naturally funny person? Or I know that you have lots of other very serious and wonderful roles too, but that was what I was wondering about in particular. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I moved from biology to acting. I almost didn't have a choice. After I graduated from school, I would hear on the radio, I came back to Los Angeles and I'd hear on the radio some promos for sitcoms and they'd, you know, give you a sample of it, some joke. And I had this reflex, this automatic response of, ugh, that was pushing the joke too hard. You got to throw it away. Remember to do that, Lisa, when you do a sitcom. What?
What?
Yeah. I mean,
when you're
in
the lab.
Right. It's like, where did that come from? And I kept having those impulses every time I would hear, you know, a sitcom or something, and oh no, I would have done it differently. And I felt like I had to just follow that impulse. And especially when I was, you know, I was 22, I didn't have a mortgage, I didn't have, you know, a husband or children or no responsibilities. And that is exactly the time I felt like you pursue something like this. You know, there will always be books and, you know, the latest research, and I could catch up to what's going on in the world of, you know, the field of biology I was interested in. So I went for it.
I understand you're going to give the Vassar graduation speech.
Yes.
What are you going to tell them?
I'm not sure. What do I have to tell them? My God. You know, they're so much smarter than I was. That's for sure. I'm not sure. Do you have any suggestions?
We'll send it out to our audience. If anyone has an email suggestion for Lisa Kudrow's graduation speech from Vassar, send it on in. We'll let
you
know.
That's great.
Lisa Kudrow is an Emmy-winning actress. She joined us today from our studios at NPR West. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you.
And you can find links to episodes of both Web Therapy and Who Do You Think You Are at our website at npr.org. Coming up, the portrait that's emerging of the man who tried to bomb Times Square and how the media may have altered that investigation. NPR's Dina Temple-Raston joins us next. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.